Let's talk movies, and given the weather around much of the country, could be a great weekend to go to the flicks. Critic Graham Tuckett joins us from the Wellington studio now. Hi, Graham.
Kia ora, Jesse. Good to be here, mate.
Before we go to this week's picks, I noticed that you reviewed that band documentary on Stuff, and you enjoyed it, hey?
Oh, the film on the band. Yeah. Sorry, I was going B-A-N-N-E-D. I was going, which one is this?
Yeah. Sorry to surprise you. I just played one of their tracks earlier after reading your review. It sounds like it's really good.
It's not bad at all. It's very much like anyone who knows anything of the history of the band and the eventual kind of fracturing of the foundational relationship between Levon Helm and Robbie Robertson. You'll get that this is very much Robbie Robertson's version of the truth, and that Levon Helm's version of the truth was slightly different. But with that little proviso that you're kind of seeing this through, it's an adaptation of Robbie Robertson's own memoir, whereas Levon Helm's memoir does differ a little, especially kind of in the later chapters. But as a story of like how five fairly disparate characters came together, how they served their apprenticeship under, what was his name, Hawks, Ronnie Hawkins and his Hawks, and then sort of rose up to become one of the most musically like musically conjoined bands you could have. Like the all five parts of that band just worked together perfectly.
Yeah.
And as they proved a couple of times in their later career, if you took one of those five members off stage, it wasn't the band anymore. It just wasn't the magic. They were, like the Beatles or the Stones or all the others you could name. It's like they were so much more than the sum of their parts. And when you put them together, they just made immortal music.
Bev is a fan. She got in touch. She says, Robbie Robertson, like a lot of lead guitarists, seemed to think he should be the top dog in the band. She says all the members were multi-talented, but she reckons Levon Helm rose above them all. And she's asked me to check out Bob Dylan's 30th anniversary documentary, where the band without Robbie perform When I Paint My Masterpiece by Bob Dylan. She reckons
I know that
spine-tingling stuff.
That clip does exist. And Levon Helm, I mean, all apologies, Phil Collins, but when it comes to like drummers who could sing, Levon Helm was the absolute king hell of all of them. But not just that, he's also he's a standalone one of the greatest male rock vocalists of his generation, and one of the greatest rock and funk and soul and blues drummers of his generation as well. But the fact that he could do them both together, when he would have been world famous for either, is I think pretty phenomenal.
Great. Hey, where did you watch that, by the way? Was it the film festival, or
it was on during the film festival? I'm not allowed to tell you this, but the distributor sent me a screener. But it is, I think, on. It's
Google.
Getting some
I looked it
big
up.
Screen
I looked it
releases.
Up.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, but it is a returnee from this year's film festival, and I've heard rumours that it's getting onto a couple of big screens around the country next week. If this review in any way helps it do that, please get it on. It's a really, really good.
Yeah,
good, solid entry in the genre.
And it's called Once Were Brothers.
That's right.
Meanwhile, this is a great premise for a movie, a gangster drama set in New Orleans just after Katrina.
Yeah, this is Cutthroat City. It is the third feature from the man who, to my eternal shame, I've always thought that the founding member of Wu-Tang Clan called himself the RZA, and is not. He calls himself RZA. It just spelled RZA, and I didn't know that. I literally found that out last night. Mm-hmm. I was slightly embarrassed. Anyway, RZA, he's made three feature films. This is the third. The first was called The Man with the Iron Fist. It was kind of a kung fu cult piece. It was pretty good. The second I haven't seen. But with Cutthroat City, I think he really has knocked it out of the park. This is a really good, solid entry in the genre. It's a classic gangster drama, but at the same time, because it's set in a near all-black community in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans in the aftermath of Katrina, it's got a political and a racial underpinning to it as well, which gives it a kind of a Spike Lee-ish sort of weight. Cutthroat City is a fairly bog-standard story. There's four or five young men. They have all been rendered pretty much unemployed or unemployable in the aftermath of Katrina. Their jobs have vanished along with their workplaces. One was a musician, one was a driver. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, I think it is, but the American organization known as FEMA, that were tasked with kind of looking after people, in charge of the rebuild, paying out what were the equivalent of unemployment checks, for bureaucratic reasons that make no sense to anybody, say that people in the Ninth Ward aren't eligible for anything like the compensation they thought they would have got. The Ninth Ward being the part of New Orleans that was absolutely devastated by Katrina and put literally under two stories of water. So these young men, very down on their uppers, they've got no prospects and a great deal of resentment. They get contacted by a by a colleague of one of them who goes by the name Cousin, and he says, look, I want you to take down this casino for me, score some money, you keep the money, it's all good. They go, the hell with it, and they commit an armed heist, which kind of works, but they don't get away with anything like the amount of money that they think they're going to get or that Cousin was expecting them to get. And they find themselves basically having to go into hiding as Cousin goes on the warpath, convinced that they've taken some of the what he regards as his loot. So from there, Cutthroat City kind of devolves into your standard gangster posturing drama, but there's so much social history and the recent politics of New Orleans, of the W. Bush presidency, just the anger. It feels like a film very, very much of its time, even though Katrina was 15 years ago now. Like the racial division, the exceptionally hard-lined racial division that you find, especially in inner-city North American cities, just gets highlighted again and again. It feels like a very, very much a film. It feels like in 15 years we've kind of learned nothing, and these same issues are raging, the same arguments are raging even harder now than they were back in 2005.
Do they do a good job of creating that world, that post-Katrina New Orleans world?
I do love it. I mean, I love the fact this thing, it must be made on a relatively modest budget. Mm-hmm. It interweaves a little bit of archival and newsreel footage and uses, I think, some locations very, very, very cunningly and carefully. I do love a film that is very location specific, like they say, right, we're shooting this in New Orleans and you can't imagine that story taking place anywhere else. And Cutthroat City, under the direction of RZA, really does pull that off. You know you are in New Orleans in the later months of 2005. There's no other landscape you could be standing on, even if you never went to the place in your life and were familiar with it. It feels like, okay, this is New Orleans 2005. It's a lovely combination of soundtrack, of newsreel footage, of what's playing on the television in the background, what's coming out of the radio, what they're seeing out of the car windows, the way that people are talking, the way that people are dressing. It's like, it just feels very, very chrono-specific and location-specific, and I admired it a great deal for that. I think at 2 hours and 3 minutes, I think a decent editor could have given it a bit of a haircut and brought it in at about 100 minutes rather than 120 minutes. But it's a pretty solid entry. And in a week, there's not much new happening out there this week. I mean, Tenet effectively has been and gone. Savage is now the number one film in the country, which I'm exceptionally pleased about. And I hope that Savage continues its run as the number one film in the country for a good couple of weeks yet. It absolutely deserves to be seen. But I think if you've seen Savage already and you're casting around for something, this is not a similar theme, by the way. Savage is not the gangster film that some people would have you believe. But, Cutthroat City is a pretty decent entry in the genre. It's got some things to say, some things on its mind. It feels more like a film out of the Spike Lee school than just out of the Quentin Tarantino school, you know?
Great. There's a Kiwi sort of bungled heist film out at the moment as well, featuring James Rolleston.
Lowdown Dirty Criminals?
Yeah, how's that gone? Is that a...
I think it's done... It's funny, I bumped into Simon Morris just now, and we were just having a chat about the respective merits of this town and Lowdown Dirty Criminals and the other sort of low to mid-budget New Zealand stuff that's out there at the moment. Mm-hmm. Everyone I know who's seen Lowdown Dirty Criminals likes it a great deal. I liked it a great deal. It makes no bones about the fact that it is an indigenous take on the style of sort of Guy Ritchie and Matthew Vaughan, that kind of East London wide boy gangster sort of thing, but set in the lower slopes of Mount Victoria in my beloved Wellington. It's got a lot of laughs in it, I think, in, oh, what's her name? No, it's Rebecca Gibney, who is the absolute like queen of Australian, early evening soap opera TV. It's got a very, very high-powered star there who really does power it through and lifts the film up at any moment when it was ever looking like sagging a little bit or looking like losing a bit of energy or not becoming as serious an undertaking as it needed to be. Rebecca Gibney just kicks that film up the butt and gets it home. I think Paul Murphy, son of Jeff, as director, done a really nice job with it. It's lean. There's not a moment wasted on screen. It's got a few genuine laughs. And it's got a moment of surpassing gore in it, which just goes on for so long that it just becomes kind of hilariously funny. But
great.
Yeah. So that's Lowdown Dirty Criminals.
Now, the other movie, so the first one you were talking about is called Cutthroat City, if anyone wants to look it up. And and then you've seen this French film, School Life.
Yeah, School Life, or La Vie Scolaire. I love saying that. It which also opened this week on a bunch of screens around the country, as did Cutthroat City. School Life is a French, it's a 2019 French film, which is getting a big screen release here now. It picked up a bunch of awards and award nominations at the French, what they call the Academies, or the Césars, I think they're called, last year. It's very much a sort of fly on the wall, almost a comedy, almost a sort of pseudo-mockumentary style, or a pseudo-documentary style, based on basically 1 year in the life of a French sort of medium high school. It's in a fairly downbeat, they describe it as a downbeat town and a downbeat school. It doesn't actually name the city it's set in, I don't think, but it's certainly not Paris. Follows a fairly a new deputy principal comes in. She's quite idealistic. She is a daughter of recent migrants to France herself, so she understands a lot more of the issues of a lot of the kids who she's going to be in charge of. It picks up her story, the story of three or four key staff members and 10 or a dozen or so of these sort of 15, 16, 17-year-old kids, all from like very, very racially and culturally diverse background, working class, inner city French kids, very, very streetwise, very savvy, very committed and loyal to each other, maybe nothing like as loyal to the ideals of the school or the state or what the teachers are trying to tell them. And what emerges is, it's been called a comedy, and it definitely is funny, but it's a very warm-hearted, very smart, very, very just beautifully written and dialogued, for want of a better verb, put-together movie. It's just, yeah, it's a year in the life of a French state school, and as such, it's pretty compelling. I really enjoyed the performances in it. I really enjoyed the presence of the kids in it. They all break well out of the sort of cliche scene from the surface. You can tell it's a very collaborative piece of work in that a lot of the actors on screen had a great hand in shaping their own characters. There's a sense that it's a sort of semi-autobiographical from a director who goes by the name GCM, Grand Corps Malade, and co-director Mehdi Edir. Stars Liam Piron, Zita Hanro is reasonably well known. Moussa Mansouley are the big names in it for people who follow French cinema. It's just a really smart ensemble piece. And if you're looking for something to maybe point a couple of teenagers at this weekend, you could really do worse than School Life. I think it's a really good portrayal of teenage life and pretty universal. Like, there's a lot of stuff in it that would resonate perfectly well with inner city New Zealand kids as well. I liked it a great deal. Hey, can I just ask this weird little question?
Yeah.
I've tried Googling this and Google can't answer, so I thought the great fleshy Wikipedia that is the RNZ listeners might know. I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today who's a sound designer for film. And we were talking about the ways in which the same sound can seem completely different depending on what scene you put it on. And he said, yeah, it's like the way that everyone in New Zealand thinks that ambulances and fire engines have got different sirens. And I went, but they do. And he said, no, they don't. And he told me that in New Zealand, the police cars and the ambulances and the fire engines, all the sirens are actually the same noise.
Great piece of trivia.
But they sound different to us because we kind of react differently to an ambulance or a fire engine or a police car.
Okay, listeners, your reaction to what Graham's just said?
Yep.
Disbelief, agreement, theories... 2101 is our text number.
I don't believe it, but I can't wait to hear.
Yeah. okay, speaking of on the roads, by the way, no change to that Auckland Harbour Bridge. NZTA's structural engineers are continuing to assess damage. The middle lanes are closed, but there are a couple of lanes going north and south still open. However, congestion's heavy, so you should avoid unnecessary travel if you can. And another New Zealand movie out now, Graham. Look,
another little micro-budget New Zealand film. This one bought home for apparently under $50,000, which is, fantastic. The film was called Dead. It is the second feature from Hayden J. Wheel, who we used to claim as a Wellingtonian. I think he's moved up your end of the country now. He has made a film. It's kind of a little bit reminiscent, I think, of Peter Jackson's The Frighteners, in that we've got Tom Sainsbury playing a very affable young man who accidentally discovers that he can see dead people, and he sort of decides to put himself around the leafy suburbs of central Auckland. meeting up with people who don't
realise. Tom Sainsbury got discovered and then now gets hired for every single job going in movies and TV. And a good thing too. I hope he's enjoying it.
Oh, very much. No, he's a lovely presence on screen. He's a very, very likeable presence in this. And he's not playing exactly the Tom Sainsbury type that we've seen him play.
No, he's very flexible.
Films.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's he also turns up in Low Down Dirty Criminals with a very funny cameo in that. Dead is a likeable, low-budget comedy. It's a little bit derivative. It's got a great walk-on cameo from the force of nature that is Jennifer Ward Leland, and Michael Hirst puts an appearance in as well. It's going for that sort of dark horror comedy with a kind of police procedural thing happening, because there's a dead policeman who walks around in his undies every scene of the movie trying to solve his own murder at the same time. It gets a little bit kind of mixed up, but it's got so many likeable bits and pieces within it that I found myself kind of urging it home towards the end. Mm-hmm. So that's Dead. Yeah, a low-budget New Zealand film. I can't believe how good and professional it looks on the screen for the tiny budget they had. It certainly doesn't look like a very, very cheap film at all. It's got some very likeable performances in it. Jennifer Ward Leland absolutely chews the screen up every chance she gets. And Tom Sainsbury is a likeable and charismatic sort of leading man in this. It's all
nice
right.
One. Graham Tuckett, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.